Hey, good evening, True Seekers. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks very much for joining us. Hope you're going to hang out for a while this evening. I guess by tradition, Friday is usually the day in talk radio where it's cleanup day, and try to cover a lot of items that might not have gotten covered during the week and comments pertaining to those items. We tended to stay away from that format for a long time, but maybe it makes sense, huh? So if you have something on your mind tonight, want to join us, the number is 800-989-1480. I couldn't have missed this one. This is from TPM Muckraker. We've been following kind of the murderous activities of Blackwater Security Force, Bush's private army, and how it has been accused and is probably very, very guilty of indiscriminate murder in Iraq. And there's been conversations between the State Department and the government, the toy government, the fake government in Iraq about the situation. Maliki, the prime minister there, has talked about getting these thugs out of town. But apparently all of that is just kind of flying over the heads of the regime in this country, because it's not just the State Department that has a cozy relationship with Blackwater. Yesterday, the U.S. Military's Transportation Command, that's through the Department of Defense, awarded Blackwater a $92 million contract for aviation-related services for U.S. military flights among the bases that we're using in South Asia. The press release, or the information, says Presidential Airways Incorporated, don't you love that name? An aviation worldwide services company doing business as Blackwater Aviation in Moyock, North Carolina, is being awarded an indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity type contract for $92 million. The contract is to provide all fixed wing aircraft, personnel, equipment, tools, material maintenance, and supervision necessary to perform passenger, cargo, and combination short takeoff and landing air transportation services between locations in the area of responsibility of Afghanistan, Kyrgyzstan, Pakistan, and Uzbekistan. This contract was competitively procured and two timely offers were received. Ooh, the performance period is from October 1, 2007 to 30 September 2011. And it goes on a bit. That's okay. See, if you are a freelance company that decides you want to murder people in an illegal war zone and you are not restricted by the laws of that land, you are not restricted because you're not military by the Uniform Code of Military Justice. You're not restricted by anybody. What's the big deal? If it's not illegal, what's the big deal? If opening fire on civilians is not illegal and you happen to be a borderline sociopath armed to the teeth, hello. Well, apparently none of this is very serious to the Bush regime because Department of Defense is maybe the Department of Defense and the Department of State, maybe their phones are not on the same frequency, and maybe the DOD is just not aware that Blackwater employees are accused in several instances. They've always been hushed up until this one. Blackwater employees are accused of blatant, wanton murder. Maybe somebody will tell Department of Defense and do something about that contract. You think? Yeah. In the Gina Six case in LaSalle Parish, Louisiana, the district attorney down there held a press briefing today about what has transpired since the demonstration last week. And today he sounded like he's channeling the late Jerry Falwell here, or maybe retiring joint Chiefs Chairman Peter Pace or somebody. I don't know. I'll play. We'll play the sound for you, and you tell me. Here is LaSalle Parish District Attorney Reed Walters.
I have decided not to appeal the decision of the Third Circuit Court of Appeals that overturned the conviction of Michael Bell in adult court and sent the case back to juvenile court. This means the case against Michael Bell will now go forward in juvenile court. But let me say this. The only way, and let me stress that, the only way that I believe that me or this community has been able to endure the trauma that has been thrust upon us is through the prayers of the Christian people who have sent them up in this community. I firmly believe and am confident of the fact that had it not been for the direct intervention of the Lord Jesus Christ last Thursday, a disaster would have happened. You can quote me on that.
The direct intervention. Well, words have meanings. Direct intervention. Jesus showed up in Gina, Louisiana, and poured oil on the stormy waters or something. I don't know. I firmly believe, he says, and am confident of the fact that had it not been for the direct intervention of the Lord Jesus Christ last Thursday, a disaster would have happened. Let me get this straight now. The Lord Jesus Christ showed up to prevent some sort of a disaster during this march, but the same Lord Jesus Christ was on vacation with the Buddha or something when the hurricane struck just a little bit further south there, Mr. Walters, and the Lord Jesus Christ decided a bunch of people should die just for sport. Of course, most of them were black, and apparently the Lord Jesus Christ, at least to Reed Walters, is not really keen on black folk. I mean, and the prima facie evidence of that is the situation in LaSalle Parish, Louisiana, last Thursday, and New Orleans Parish, and a couple other ones a couple of years ago. This Jesus that they're talking about is a hoot. Is he not a hoot? Good God in heaven, so to speak. I firmly believe, had not been for the direct intervention of the Lord Jesus Christ last Thursday, a disaster would have happened. Okay. You have a strange concept of Jesus Christ, Mr. Reed or Mr. Walter or whatever the hell your name is. Strange interpretation indeed. Oh, I don't know about you. It just gives me the willies. That kind of talk. The direct intervention. I wish somebody in the media there, of course, they usually reporters ignore that because it's, you know, statements like that are a little grim and gruesome and over the top, you know. But one of these days I'd like to hear a reporter who is standing in the way of that kind of a debasement of the part of the Christian faith that may have some value to it. And I'd like to hear that reporter just say, well, Mr. District Attorney, how did the Lord Jesus Christ directly intervene? If you would, sir. Maybe he touched the heart of the state troopers or the cops or whoever, and they decided to hold their fire when the marchers went by and not tase anybody or not lock anyone up. You suppose that's what he means? I have no idea what he means. It's scary, though. This is Nova M. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
I'm in the city. I'll help him round up all the strays. I don't have much to offer him. I'm very small, you see. But I can love my Jesus, and he can still love me. And partner, all I want to do is satisfy my Lord and be the bestest Christian boy in all the whole wide world. I'll be a cowboy, a Christian cowboy. I'll work for Jesus all my days. And on the prairie or in the city, I'll help him round up all the strays.
Mike Malloy Show. Talk radio matters here.
Right. 21 past the hour. I got an email here from Paula. She writes, Mike, my daughter and I attended the September 15th Peace March in D.C. After much thought, this is what she wrote in her blog about the state of our country. She's a young woman with two preschoolers and has little hope of a truly democratic country surviving for her kids. Here's what Paula's daughter wrote. Last weekend's march has left me with a heavy heart. Nearly 100,000 peace activists traveled to D.C. for a peaceful demonstration to tell Congress to grow a backbone and tell the Bush administration that the time has come to bring our troops home and end the war in Iraq. March organizers warned us that there would be counter-protesters there trying to provoke a confrontation, but encouraged us to ignore them and not sink to their level as we exercised our First Amendment rights. I never expected, however, to encounter the level of hatred and violence that spewed forth from this group, whose website makes the claim, patently false, as we would see, that they oppose the use of violence, vandalism, or verbal assault. As we marched peacefully toward the Capitol, we were yelled and cursed at, threatened, pelted with debris, and assaulted by the smell of a vile concoction set off as we passed by. I thought they could sink no lower until one of these self-proclaimed defenders of our nation's veterans ran up to one of the peace activists, the father of a Marine killed in Iraq, and snatched the photo of his fallen son from his belongings. As the man ran to recover this treasured possession, he was surrounded and attacked by the counter-protesters. Like a scene from the streets of Berlin or Rome in the 30s, these animals held him down while one of them kicked him repeatedly. Hitler's stormtroopers would have been proud. Even the intervention of my own mother, 60 years old and a fraction of the size of the attackers, wading into the pile to try to protect him, failed to stop the attack. The beating stopped moments before the police arrived. They saw none of it and arrested no one. While the attack on this brave man was unprovoked and shameful, the coverage of the incident by the media can only be described as pathetic. None of the reports made any mention of the disgraceful actions of these counter-protesters or their attack on a father still mourning the loss of his son. Perhaps I shouldn't be surprised. Since the attacks of 9/11, the media has cowered with its tail tucked between its legs, afraid to question the Bush administration, afraid to dig for the truth, and afraid to protest the erosion of the freedoms on which their existence and our liberty depend. I'll never forget the feeling of being let down by America at this march. Let down that only 100,000 people attended. Let down that our elected representatives are more interested in covering their political backsides than what we the people have to say. Let down that the media continues to be a Bush administration mouthpiece. Let down that the people of this country still have the wool pulled over their eyes and do not realize how many of their freedoms are already gone. Because of this, I will never stop fighting to bring back the freedoms we used to have in the country. If you sit at home ashamed of the direction our country has gone, then it's time to speak up, or one day you will realize you no longer have the right to do so. And that was written by Christina, a young woman with two preschoolers, who attended the D.C. march back in 1968. back on the 15th. Yeah, I've seen many, many reports on the beating of this man. I don't know. Can you imagine what he must be thinking? And as far as the right-wing counter-protesters, Republicans are fascists or Republicans are fascists. This is a standard response now. And, of course, when you have violence pouring out of this administration on every level, whether it's in Iraq or this country, just utter, absolute, militarized violence, the more brain dead this Nazi commander that we have in charge are going to act out. They're going to attack. That's one of the reasons I tend now to want to stay away. That's one of the reasons from these sorts of massive demonstrations, because I don't know how I would react to something like that. Probably extremely violently. And, I have a child to raise now, so I would not want to wind up in prison for a very, very long time. You know what I mean? We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
All I got is this compromise, and a bag full of alibis. Lord, as empty as a bottle of whiskey in my shaking hand. It's gonna be peace in the valley tomorrow. 'Cause tonight we're gonna blow it all away. Love would feel so twisted.
Well, that was incredible. Yeah.
That was a little early, wasn't it? Oh, my goodness. All right. Got all focused on what we're doing down here and tried to get out for a minute early. Oh, well. I guess just reading Christina's letter sent in to us by her mom, or not her letter, it was something that she posted to her blog, was enough to certainly divert our attention. All right. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Truth seekers, time to snuggle up with your favorite screamer, more Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. The children's health care program that has now been passed by both the House and the Senate with a veto-proof majority. Apparently there were some 16 or 17 Republicans who want to get reelected. That's the only reason they voted for it. Over in the House, there were just an enormous number of Republicans who said, nah, screw kids. So it's not veto-proof yet, but the Children's Health Plan has generated all sorts of discussion, and the curse word of choice for Republicans now, as a result of this, is socialized medicine. You know, the government's role in healthcare programs, that's called socialized medicine. And the children are very aware of that. When these kids go in for their preventive medicine, for their checkups, for their colds and asthma, you know, they sit there and think, damn, I'm here because of socialized medicine. Oh, Jesus, Mommy, why can't you and Daddy take care of me? I mean, they sit there and talk about it. I've seen them. Philip Boffey, writing in the Times today, said, really, Giuliani has used the S word, socialized medicine, to denounce this legislation that would enlarge a children's health insurance program. Mitt Romney, who must be insane, He's got to be crazy. He called the Hillary Clinton's plan European-style socialized medicine, which, of course, it's not. But in the process of doing that, he ignores the similarities in the health care reform he pushed through as governor of Massachusetts. Republicans are liars. They're scum. They're filth. They're just utter absolute filth. I don't know who they're talking to. Are they talking to O'Reilly's audience and Limbaugh's audience and Hannity's audience when they make this stuff up and say that taking care of children in this society is socialized medicine? Oh, my God. Oh, my God. But as Philip Boffey wrote today, no one has the nerve to brand this country's purest systems of so-called socialized medicine, that would be the military and veterans hospitals, for what they are. In both systems, care is not only paid for by the government, but delivered in government facilities by doctors who are government employees. But even so, a parade of Washington's political dignitaries, including President Bush, has turned to the National Naval Medical Center in Bethesda for checkups and treatment with no ideological complaint anywhere. Politicians who deplore government-run health care for average Americans are only too happy to use it themselves. Where does Cheney go? I don't even know where Cheney goes now. Where does he go when he needs his batteries replaced? Does he go to the Naval Hospital at Bethesda, or does he go to Sears? I have no idea. Where does Bush go when he has precancerous polyps removed from his guts? Doesn't he go to, is it Walter Reed? No, I guess it's Bethesda. Son of a bitch. Can you believe that? He's getting socialized medicine so he doesn't get colon cancer. Now, that's not right. Come on, George. Bite the bullet. Buck up, pal. Either pay for this yourself or get cancer and die. You can't do socialized medicine. George, what kind of an example are you setting for all these 10 million children? Please, George. What is the children learning from such a crappy-ass example? You going to a government facility where government doctors take out your government precancerous polyps. George! Shame on you! God, I hate these people. And, of course, Medicare, single-payer program in which the government pays for the care and sets reimbursement rates, but the actual care is delivered by private doctors and hospitals. So we're just one step away from socialized medicine there! Right? When Medicare first started back in the mid-60s, it was screamed. I remember this. It was screamed about back then. Oh, socialized medicine! But it's become so popular that even Republicans leave it the hell alone. They call it third rail of American politics. Certain to electrocute anyone who tries to cut it or privatize it. And the 43 million beneficiaries of Medicare, they're socialists. All the dirty bastards. All these old farts that are on the rolls, socialists, every one of them. But all day long, if you listen to the brain-dead emanations floating out of right-wing talk radio, this is all you hear. This is all you hear. Do you ever hear Hannity or Limbaugh accusing the president of having his precancerous polyps removed in a system of medicine that is fully socialized? Ever hear that? No, of course you don't. Why not? Now, as far as Hillary Clinton's proposed universal health care plan, socialism? Oh, please. Her plan, as Philip Boffey points out, seeks to bolster employer-provided health benefits. And Senator Clinton, not too much longer you can get away with that, because industry after industry is going down the toilet from that. Senator Clinton, two words, General Motors? Anyway, her plan seeks to bolster employer-provided health benefits and create new purchasing pools to help individuals buy private policies at low group rates. Senator Clinton, it's not going to work. Single payer, Senator. Now, her plan also would expand government regulation, and she wants to make a Medicare-like option available to compete with private policies, but that would only lead to a socialized single-payer system if everybody were to choose the Medicare-like option. Maybe that is Senator Clinton's ulterior motive, you think? Put both out there. Which one do you think the people are going to pick? See, that's the thing that the Hannitys and Limbaughs and the rest of these pigs never mention on their fake programs. That given a choice, how many people do you think, I'm not saying everybody, the top one-tenth, 1% of wealth holders in this country that seem favored by this Bush crime family, of course, get out of here. They want to go to a clinic, they get on their private jet and go to Lucerne, Switzerland. But I'm talking about you and me. Given a choice of paying $2,000, $4,000, $8,000, $10,000 a year and getting crappy-ass care, oh, not that the doctors are bad, but the doctors are overloaded. And in so many instances, the doctor's staff doesn't know what the hell it's doing. Huh? Oh, you got an appointment. Oh, okay, well, come on. Oh, all right. A choice between that and efficiently run socialized medicine like the president gets, like the vice president gets, like members of Congress get. You know, socialized communist medicine. How dare George Bush have his precancerous polyps snipped by a socialistic system? What kind of an example, George, are you putting out there? But that's what the discussion on these little rugrats, these little curtain climbers, you know, that even 17 Republicans found some political advantage. Usually Republicans don't give a tinker's damn about children unless it's a clump of cells that hasn't it's not even identifiable yet as a human being. Then the Republicans are very interested. But this one they're interested in. Why? Okay, way back in the day when this was put together, who put together the children's health care bill? I think it was Orrin Hatch and Ted Kennedy, right? I have no idea why Orrin Hatch got involved in it. Maybe he was up for re-election that year. Who knows? But we do have 16 or 17 Republicans in the Senate now who have all of a sudden discovered that some of their constituents, no lie, some of their constituents, just enough that if they don't mollycoddle these pre-socialists, they might vote Democrat. Some of their constituents actually have children and could benefit from the CHIPS program. Well, listen closely. You hear that stampeding of feet? Those are those Republican senators rushing to vote for the Children's Health Insurance Program. Ah, but my lawyer's such a cynic. Maybe they're doing it because they're compassionate. Maybe they're doing it because they love children. Maybe they're doing it because they believe in what Jesus said, suffer the little children to come unto me, for such is the kingdom of God. Maybe they're doing it because they like children. Maybe they're doing it because they have grandchildren. Maybe they're doing it because it's the right thing to do. Maybe they're doing it because...
They pulled in just behind the bridge. He lays her down. He frowns. My life's a funny thing. Am I still too young? He kissed her then and there. She took his ring, took his babies. It took him minutes, took her nowhere. Heaven knows she'd have taken in a finger.
All night.
She wants a young American.
sometimes when you don't measure, you just shuffle kids through. Then you wake up at the high school level and find out that the literacy level of our children are appalling.
Speaking of Bush and his attempts to talk about children, at the White House briefing today, Too Much Cappuccino Perino was questioned about a comment Bush made when he was talking about his No Child Left Behind program the other day. First came the news that Bush was given extensive phonetic pronouncers for his speech to the UN, and then the White House website cleaned up his asininity in the official transcript when he was speaking about that program. It was widely publicized in the media. The exact quote from Mensa Man was, "As yesterday's positive report card shows, children still learn when standards are high and results are measured." So today, a reporter, Thursday, a reporter questioned Too Much Cappuccino Perino about that editing. The reporter said, "Dana, I'd like to ask you about the White House accounts of things that the president says on the record. How do you all decide, what is the mechanism for changing verbatim comments that the president makes, as was the case in his slip-up yesterday?"
We checked into that. That was not something that anyone in the press office or communication office or anyone in the White House asked for. It was done at the stenographer's office, and we asked for it to be changed back.
So it's been changed back?
If it hasn't, we made the request. I haven't gone back to check, but I made the request to make sure that it was accurate. Look, you know, the president, it is no secret, sometimes makes grammatical errors. And he also is somebody, though, that gives a lot of public comments. I think in the grand scheme of things, if any of us were, well, maybe now I am, monitored for such things, that we would all have slip-ups from time to time. But the point is, he was very proud of the record that the test scores that the students achieved.
Well, you know, we're all monitored for what we say in these seats and what you say from the podium. But you know,
the integrity of the transcripts are very important to me, and I've made that clear.
Oh yes, she's a pistol, isn't she? Huh? She's a pistol. Okay, Martin wants to know. Martin in Purdue, at Purdue. Martin, I've kind of answered this several times, so I'll be happy to do it again. Martin writes, "Mike, what do you think of Ron Paul? Not exactly your ideological cup of tea, I'll bet, but he's the only candidate of either party except Kucinich who wants a non-interventionist foreign policy. Could you give him some on-air kudos?" Martin, actually, no, Martin, I can't, because, you know, I've known of Ron Paul since the mid-80s, 20 years. Well, not 20 years. Yeah, 20 years. When I was just starting in radio, I think Ron Paul was just kind of making a blip as a political person. And then, of course, he ran for president. When was it, in 92? Was he a candidate in 92 or was it 86? I mean, 88. I'm not sure. But he ran for president on the Libertarian Party ticket. Ron Paul is not a Republican. He is a Libertarian. He switched to, just like Michael Bloomberg, the mayor of New York, is not a Republican either. He's a Democrat. Always has been. And Bloomberg did the same thing Ron Paul did. Switched parties so he could get elected. Ron Paul left the Libertarian Party in form, if not in fact, so he could get elected as a Republican. Since he is a right-wing libertarian, Martin, that means, among other things, that he believes the government has no business doing anything except defending the country if we are invaded. That's about the only thing I think that right-wing libertarians believe in. No Food and Drug Administration, no Security and Exchange Commission. I mean, I can go on all night and tell you the things that libertarians say should not be in existence. No Medicare, no Social Security, no Medicaid, nothing. So the fact that Ron Paul comes out against, if I want an anti-war candidate, which I do, it is Dennis Kucinich, because Dennis Kucinich is not a nutball. Ron Paul is crazy. He's absolutely, any person who says that in the year 2007, with 300 million people in this country, the economy about to collapse, all sorts of madness afoot in the society, any candidate who looks at it and says, well, I'll tell you the way to solve that, get the government out of everything. Bridges and dams? Forget about it. Minerals, Department of Agriculture, get out of here. Get everything. Pull everything out. Nothing. Everybody's on their own. Ron Paul makes anarchists look like puppies. So, Martin, I hope that answers your question. And anyone else who is inclined to write to me about Ron Paul, I mean, go ahead. It's okay. But my answer about Ron Paul is... has not changed in 20 years. It just hasn't. He's a nutcase. Now, as far as a non-interventionist U.S. foreign policy, that's impossible. Nobody can have a that sounds like Pat Buchanan. Nobody can have, unless you're talking about non-interventionist where it concerns no war. Now, I can get behind that. But non-interventionist, what does that mean? How does Ron Paul mean it? You need to check out what libertarians have been talking about for a long time. That means no treaties, no international agreements, no nothing. A libertarian point of view is the government is six people who get together and say, how's the army? Oh, it's fine. Okay, Congress is adjourned. Interventionist has a lot of meanings, I think, Martin. Interventionists, we are intervening into the area of human rights when we agree to the Geneva Conventions on how we conduct ourselves when we go around the planet murdering people under the guise of war. So interventionists, what is Ron Paul? You need to check that out, because Ron Paul's basic platform is the basic platform of the Libertarian Party, which is don't get involved in nothing. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. No thanks. Welcome back. 6:30 past the hour. I guess it might be a good idea to take a couple of phone calls since I promised. Let's start with Will, who is listening on Sirius Satellite Radio in Michigan. Will, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike.
Hey.
How you doing?
Doing good.
I wanted to call in and talk to you about a subject that's probably near and dear to your heart. Depleted uranium.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God.
I've been doing a little bit of reading on it lately, and I found out that Connecticut and Louisiana have passed some legislation to help their veterans get testing to find out if they've been exposed to it or not. And I'm working on a project to get similar legislation passed in Michigan, and I'd like to put the word out about it, and
sure.
maybe get some other people in other states working on it too.
Yeah, the problem is going to be massive, and it's one of those problems that is being swept completely
right
under the desert, so to speak. There was exposure to depleted uranium during the first Gulf War, but that was mostly the civilian population. Now that we've had an occupying army in there for 4 years, even though they're rotating, there are going to be some health problems that are going to be on the scope, a scale of Agent Orange. And, you know, this is the horrible part. The Vietnam War ended 30 years ago, and it's only been in the past couple, three, 4 years with efforts by veterans groups in the courts that the filthy, putrid Department of Defense has even acknowledged that the horror of Agent Orange on our people, not to mention on the people of Vietnam. So your efforts, any efforts with soldiers who've been exposed to depleted uranium, you're going to need an awful lot of work. I just wonder how long the struggle is going to be for people who have been exposed to DU.
Well, like I said, state legislatures of Connecticut and Louisiana have passed legislation to help veterans get testing.
Well, that's
to see if they've been exposed.
That's good. Don't expect any help from the federal level. You're a veteran. You know that they don't give a damn about you.
We're going to have to do this at the state level because you know the feds aren't going to do anything about it. I don't know whether I've been exposed or not. I've never been tested. In Desert Storm, it was mainly used in rural areas and there's not very, it's sparsely populated, not very many people were affected by it originally. But now that we've used it in urban warfare, it's going to be a really big problem for the civilian population of Iraq.
Well, let me just disagree with you a little bit there, Will, because, you know, depleted uranium is something that I've been aware of for over a decade, and maybe 15 years. And yeah, it was used in rural areas, but what happens is it gets sucked up into the dust. And one thing that Iraq, like most countries in the Middle East, are noted for are their sandstorms.
Yep.
And that stuff gets sucked up into a sandstorm, in the atmosphere, and dumped wherever the sandstorm decides to dump it. So everyone is exposed to it now. 10 years ago, I was starting to hear reports of children born to Iraqi mothers who don't do the word deformed justice. These were children out of the womb who never had a chance beyond the first couple of days because the deformities were so incredibly horrific. And medical researchers, epidemiologists, I don't know if any from this country, but certainly from Europe, who have investigated this and studied it, draw a straight line between depleted uranium and these horrible deformities and children's deaths. So I know you know all this, but
right.
I just don't think that the American public is aware of what we've done to Iraq.
About 70% of the Marine reservists that I went over there with came back and got cancer later on.
And are having children with hideous deformities here in this country now. These are genetic deformities that are result of genetic, cellular changes in the sperm of these men who were exposed to it.
Right. It causes chronic fatigue, neurological symptoms, upper lower respiratory symptoms, menstrual disorders, kidney problems. It breaks down DNA. There's a lot of symptoms that go with it.
Ain't war grand? Rush Limbaugh and Hannity and Ali North and the rest of these filthy, filthy subhumans, they just love war. When you mention this stuff to them, I don't know what happens. Will their faces just kind of dissolve into a white film? All right. Do you have a website on this? What do you want people to do?
I've posted some links about depleted uranium and the legislation that has been passed at the state level about it. You can find it at oneangrypatriot.us.
That's right. One All spelled out, oneangrypatriot.us.
Yep.
All right, and I also suggest that people just, oh, my God, just type depleted uranium into a search engine, and if it's Google, you'll come back with maybe 2 million hits.
Yeah.
Oneangrypatriot.us if you want to find out what Will's doing. Will, good luck. Keep us posted on, okay?
Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate your time, sir. Yeah, we don't know about depleted uranium. Most of us don't even know about Agent Orange. That was covered up so effectively by the Department of Defense and then by several administrations subsequent to our defeat in Vietnam that Agent Orange, the only people who were acutely aware of it were the soldiers and their families when they came back with, you know, being told by Dow Chemical, no, this is fine. Here's another 1,000 great big drums of it. Just go ahead. Your Robert McNamara, your defense chief, wanted this stuff. Okay, it's a powerful defoliant. This will help you find those little brown skinned bastards, those little slopes, those little gooks, huh? Just dump some of this stuff out. Spray it out the back of those big C-130s, and jungle will disappear in a heartbeat. And it's safe. Don't worry about it, soldier, Marine. Don't worry about it. The American public, we have a whole generation out here now that to whom Vietnam is like, oh, I don't know, in my generation it was kind of like, I don't know, the independence of India from the British. You know, I read about it when I got into middle school, or we didn't call it middle school back then, in high school. We have kids out here now, I guess. I don't know. I don't have children in school right now. But in high school, I guess they're learning something about Agent Orange. What's Agent Orange? Vietnam. What is that? Very little, though. You know, history is written by the victors, and since we had our ass handed to us by the Vietnamese, it's very difficult to write about the fact that we deliberately and consciously, with malice, much malice, aforethought, poisoned their country. And now with depleted uranium, who knows about the what? What are you talking about, Malloy? That's so 1990s, depleted uranium. Who talks about that, right? Well, Will is talking about it, apparently. Tony is calling from Minneapolis, listening on the internet. Tony, welcome to the program. Hey, Tony. All right, put him on hold. Let's take a break. Come on, Tony, be alert. We want to talk to you, but I'll put you on hold. Come back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Get ready. You gotta move. You may be high, you may be low, you may be down, no place to go. But when the Lord gets ready, you gotta move. You gotta move.
Ready for Radical Talk Radio? Make mine Mike Malloy on Nova M.
Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field that this
21 past the hour. All right, let's see if we can get Tony on now. He's calling from Minneapolis, listening on the internet. Hey, Tony.
Hey, Mike, can you hear me now?
I hear you fine.
Okay, well, thanks for all the work you're doing.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah, now, Amy Goodman had Greenspan on our Democracy Now! Broadcast.
Uh-huh.
I think it was Tuesday or something. If you go to democracynow.org,
right,
you can find an archive clip of it.
Uh-huh.
And he's a libertarian, you know.
He's what?
A libertarian.
Who is?
He's like Ron Paul.
Greenspan?
That's what he confessed. In fact, if you go there in Democracy Now!, you will see it.
Well, what makes you think that, I mean, did he say, I'm a libertarian?
Yes.
Well, but his, I can say I'm the Pope, and I'm not even Catholic. The fact that Greenspan likes to tinker with the money supply to the degree that he does in order to influence, political action in this country would indicate to me he's not a libertarian at all. I don't think a libertarian in the first place would even have a Department of the Treasury. It would just be, put your stuff up for sale, and you go buy it, and you people go make something. I don't know. If he calls himself a libertarian, I just disagree.
And here's what's interesting. In fact, when you get a chance, go to democracynow.org and find that interview he had.
Uh-huh.
He believed in the shipping jobs to China or India, because he believed that he wants prices of labor to go so down that we can compete with China or India in wage prices, you know,
yeah.
And the destruction of the middle class. I mean, as I listen to him really come clean about who he is, as Amy and another guest questioned him, I mean, it's creepy what these guys believe.
Right. I don't completely understand. As a matter of fact, I don't understand on any level what the monetary policies of a libertarian are. But I do believe that he is, I'm willing to be educated here. But I just don't see Alan Greenspan being, by definition, libertarian. Not that it matters, but anything else, Tony? I'll check out the interview. But like I say, I can sit on this program and tell people that I'm a conservative. And I'm not, but it may be politically advantageous for me to say that to somebody. I wouldn't, but Greenspan, to me, is a manipulator. He allowed the economic situation in this country to get where it is because he was a supporter of Bush. Now he's bad-mouthing Bush, but who in the hell had the policy to set economic policy? I mean, who had the authority to set economic policy if not Alan Greenspan? So,
and in the interview, Amy brought up Paul Krugman. You know Paul Krugman?
Yes, uh-huh.
A critique that he had written in, I don't know, it was the New York Times or somewhere.
Right.
And he brought this up to Alan Greenspan. So what do you say about this, you know?
Uh-huh.
And the way he danced around it, you know, and he brought in the way the libertarian mindset of shipping things to where it's all cheap, you know, shipping jobs, destroying the middle class, you know, labor unions. I mean, I'm paraphrasing what I saw, but that interview, I think it was Tuesday or Wednesday.
Okay, I'll try and get to it, Tony. I've got a mountain of stuff to get to, but I'll definitely try to get to it, and I appreciate you turning me on to it. Lobo is calling from Chicago, listening on the internet. Hey, Lobo.
Yo, Mike, how you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
All right. I actually talked to you, it was April 4th of 06, last year.
Good Lord.
Before I went back out to Camp Casey. I'm with the Veterans for Peace and the Vietnam Vets Against War, and I'm working, you know, off and on now.
Okay, I remember you. Sure.
Yeah. Will was talking earlier, another person who knows just about everything there is to know about depleted uranium is a Desert Storm vet named Dennis Kine, K-Y-N-E. And if they Google him, they'll probably get some of the things he's written about.
Uh-huh.
He's an expert on that, too. I just I heard you talking earlier about my friend Carlos Arredondo, who was the Gold Star father who got beat on by these cowardly bully sissies who surrounded him when we ended up at the Capitol. On September 15th, I was at the front of the march with the Veterans for Peace. We escorted Iraq Vets Against War at the front of the march, and when we got there to the sidewalk in front of the Capitol, Carlos turned and went back with his wagon with his son's coffin on it and the pictures of his son around on the coffin.
Oh, my God.
And that's when he got surrounded.
Oh, my God.
And there was, you know, about 50,000 people between.
Hey, hold on a second, Lobo. I'm going to hear the rest of this, but I got a break here. We'll pick up the conversation with Lobo when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
All your life, you were only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird, fly. Blackbird, fly.
Reality Radio for a Rational World. The Mike Malloy Show, only on Nova M Radio.
Mother, do you think she's good enough?
It's about 25 before the hour. We're talking with Lobo, who has called in from Chicago. All right, Lobo, go ahead. Thanks for holding on.
Yes, sir. Well, on the 15th, I mean, it's just they're just accelerating and getting more and more crazy with what the police are doing, too.
Mm-hmm.
Polly Miller, when she went over the wall at the Capitol and laid down as instructed and put her arms out when she was told to, one of the Capitol police grabbed her arm, yanked it behind her, and she ended up with a separated shoulder and torn ligament.
Right.
I wasn't there then. I went to look for Carlos at that point. But they just, if you saw the video of the Reverend Lennox Yearwood,
yes,
from the Hip Hop Coalition,
right?
I wasn't there then, or I would have bear hugged him from behind and whispered in his ear, "It's time to back off," because I saw that coming.
Mm-hmm.
And when I heard about it, I knew they're just getting crazy now. And the Capitol Police answer to Congress, and this Democratic majority is supposed to be a different deal, but they're not taking care of business in any which way. And they're letting these people get crazier, and we're trying to work for peace. I've been a cop for 24 years now, and I'm getting real tired of what I see here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want my job to be easier by getting rid of the Constitution and habeas corpus and all, and just being able to lock up anybody for anything. And this is, but they're all coming down on us. And when Carlos got knocked down, he had 5-6 people kicking on him all over his body.
If I were to see something like that, like I've said before, I would either wind up in jail or wind up dead. You know, this is the man that when they brought word that his son had been killed in Bush's war, he for the audience who don't know this, he lost it and he tried to. I think he did set fire to the car that the officers were driving, the military officers were driving to bring, or the van, was it a car or a van? But it was a van. Yeah, he went nuts, as I would, as most people who love their children would, and that kind of contempt from these right wing pigs, Jesus, Lobo, I couldn't handle it. You know, you all who were there, who could restrain yourselves from. I mean, just doing violence to these bastards. You have my respect.
Well, it's not easy. I'm trying to talk to these young vets. And you got to understand, the Iraq vets against war, they're raw. They're fresh out. And you have people, I had a guy calling me from, sitting down and talking to me with at Camp Casey in 06, talking to me about something that happened to him in Korea in 1951 for the first time he ever talked about it.
Yeah.
And these people, these young guys are out there and they're trying to get the story out. And that takes such courage to go to speak out and relive all this crap that they got to deal with every time they try to go to sleep at night.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, we're working with all of this and trying to get some kind of justice and some kind of peace in this world. And we got to depend on some higher ups in the Air Force to disobey orders directly from Cheney. Otherwise, we would have bombed Iran a couple of weeks ago.
Do you think that story is true? I've seen that story. I haven't talked about it because, you know, I just don't know anymore what's true and what isn't true. What Lobo's talking about is that those six nukes that are, what was it, four or six?
There were six that left Minot,
yeah,
North Dakota,
right,
and five were inventoried at Barksdale, Louisiana. There
right,
was one unaccounted for still.
And the story that's out there now is that those nukes were heading for launch against Iran, and some higher-ups, I don't know what that means, in the United States Air Force said, no, we're not going to do it. So, you know, I don't know about the story. You've just got to wonder half the time, Lobo. These people are making me insane because, you know, if somebody came up to me right now and said, your name is Mike Malloy, I don't know that I'd believe them.
Well, it's getting to that point with the doublespeak all the time. But the deal is, I mean, that happened with the Navy, with the carrier strike force outside of and the Straits of Hormuz off the coast of Iran months ago. With the airstrikes that they wanted to order. And,
well, my understanding of that was that, what's his name, the admiral in charge of all that, just slow-walked that deployment. He held back. I'm drawing a blank on his name. He held back and just did it slow enough until the second battle group was gone that was supposed to be rotation. So the second one left, and then they brought the third one in. At one point, there were supposed to be three battle groups there, but they held back. So, I don't know what's going on anymore. All I know is there's some evil sons of bitches who are playing with my head and America's head. There's some evil, evil, filthy people who apparently lust after war and death and destruction and murder and mayhem.
It's big money. It's blood money.
It's money,
big
sure.
Money.
I hear you.
Thing is, it's not mutiny. People have to understand, the people who are on active duty have to understand that it's not mutiny. It's your duty, not your option, to disobey an unlawful order. And that's what these people did. They disobeyed an unlawful order, and we need more of that, and we're working on that inside the active duty military now also, because without that, we've got real problems with this White House. They are dead set on going into Iran, and that's what we're trying to avoid now.
Are you in a helicopter?
No, I'm in Chicago. I'm at work. It's just somebody going overhead. That's probably the NSA checking out.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. All right, Lobo, I got to leave it there. Thanks, pal. Stay in touch. Don't let it be another year before you call in, please.
Yes, sir. Well, you guys stay strong. I appreciate what y'all do. I love the sound of Kathy's voice, and you take care of little Molly and be good to yourselves and keep it lit. I'm keeping it lit, brother. I'm keeping it lit.
All right, Lobo. Take care. Take care. Take care. Yeah, take care. Boy, this feels like a real shifting of gears now after that conversation. But Liz sent this in to me. She cut and pasted the little conversation between Amy Goodman and Alan Greenspan. Thanks, Liz. So I don't have to go to the website, and which I probably just wouldn't get around to. This is where Greenspan says the following, quote, "Well, I stated that I'm a libertarian Republican, which means I believe in a series of issues such as smaller government, constraint on budget deficits, free markets, globalization, a whole series of other things, including welfare reform. And as you may remember, Bill Clinton was pretty much doing much the same agenda. And so I got to consider him as someone, as he described it, we were both an odd couple because he's a centrist Democrat, and that's not all that far from libertarian Republicanism." Okay, I don't need to read the rest of it, and thanks, Liz, I appreciate it. But obviously, Greenspan is talking something different from Ayn Rand's characters in her novels about and her treatises on libertarianism, because there's no such thing as a Republican libertarian, in my opinion. I mean, I'm no expert, but I'm just saying, a Republican libertarian, I don't know what the hell that means. It sounds to me that he's saying he's a free market Republican. I know what that means. Or he's the type of Republican, a traditional or a classic Republican, modern day, I'm talking about modern politics, a classic Republican. But a libertarian, if you get the definition, the pure political definition of a libertarian, Unless it's all changed. Hell, maybe it has. Maybe Bush has changed the definition in all the encyclopedias and Wikipedias on Earth. I wouldn't be surprised. They have the power to do that, apparently. But a libertarian is somebody who believes pretty much in no government. Certainly not in the kinds of programs that were set up in this country after the Great Depression back in the 30s by Roosevelt and added to by Democratic presidents over the past 80 years. That's not libertarianism. Libertarianism does not believe it's a political ideology. I can't believe it doesn't parallel anything that has been enacted in this country over the past 80 years for the good of the social fabric, the social contract. That's libertarianism says, go screw yourself. Go screw yourself. You want food? Okay, either grow your own or go to the grocery store. But if you get food poisoning, don't bitch about it. That's how the free market works. If enough people die, then you all will stop shopping at that grocery store. That's all. So I don't want to get into a great big discussion here about libertarianism. I really don't. As a matter of fact, I'll take one more call on it from Gerald Lee here in Phoenix, and then we're going to drop it. Hey, Gerald Lee, welcome to the program.
Hey there, Mike.
Hi.
I have a couple of things, but I had, I was listening to this thing about Greenspan.
Yeah.
And thanks to good old Tom Hartman, he talks to those people, there's two different kinds of libertarians.
Right.
There's the purists who come right out of Ayn Rand.
Right.
And do we need to say who she was?
No, I think most people know. Atlas Shrugged and the Fountainhead and her political philosophy. I know Republicans love to quote her, and yet these are the same Republicans who suck up everything they can get their hands on.
Yeah, I know.
But they still quote Ayn Rand for some reason.
Well,
hey, hold on a second, Charlie. Let me put you on hold. I got another break here. And we'll come back after the break and finish up the discussion, and then we'll move on. I appreciate no more calls after Gerald Lee about libertarianism. It just makes my eyes go bloodshot, you know what I'm saying? And my eardrums start to burst. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy on Nova M.
Why does everything cost so much money? Could somebody please help out my family?
Mike Malloy Show on Nova M Radio. Talk radio matters here.
It's about 10 before the hour. We're talking with Gerald Lee, who called in from Phoenix, listening to KPHX. Okay, where were we?
Well, you were upset about the libertarians,
right,
which I am too. I have to have this argument with family members. Anyway, I had a tidbit is that Ayn Rand had a cult following when she was in New York City.
Yes, she did.
And it seems that Greenspan was initiated into her circle.
Oh, really?
Yes. And I thought that was very interesting myself.
Well, he was, or is, I shouldn't put it in past tense. I think he's in his mid-80s, so he probably was around. I think the Fountainhead and all that was written in the 50s, I believe, the early 50s. So we're not talking about that long ago.
Yeah, so he
could have
done it. Yeah, as old as my
parents.
You were starting
to say though that there's pure libertarianism, and then we had to take a break. What was the other?
Well, that was not the point. I just wanted to say the background between Ayn Rand, that he could be one. He could be kind of amorphosizing because at his age he could also be running things together. But anyway, I was just thought it was really interesting that he was actually initiated into her circle. And my second point.
Yeah, go ahead.
Is that it was fun having you here in Phoenix, and I'm the one that brought you a glass of wine with the long silver hair.
Oh, it was you!
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Geraldine.
There's a neat kind of little story I thought that goes with that is because I was standing there thinking, oh, gosh, I'd really, because you were talking about really, drinking good wine and stuff,
right.
And I thought, it'd be really nice to have a glass of red wine to hand to you, a really good glass. And then all of a sudden, the guard to the VIP room said, gee, I'd like to have a piece of cake. Would you go get me a piece of cake? I'll get you a free drink.
Well, that worked out real well.
And then I said, pour a good one. It's for Mike. And that's how you, that's what you got.
Well, that's great. Well, thanks, Geraldine. Apparently, I'm coming back out there sometime before the end of the year, I believe.
All right.
So
in November, I hope.
I think it's sometime in November. I understand Randy was out there recently. So.
Oh, she was so much fun.
Yeah, yeah.
She's so much fun. I mean, she's so much fun in person.
She's a real sweetheart.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well,
she's a party girl, too.
Yeah, and then there was one more thing. I have started doing this, is when I call in, I have to leave what I call a 108 ways to empower yourself.
Yeah.
Because I called in John Elliott one time and was talking about how disgusted I was with every new day there was some new atrocity that I had to face.
Mm-hmm.
Happening to my country.
I know.
You know, and so, and then the guy right after me said, you know, all these people call in, but they don't have any ways to make it better. So I didn't call in for a couple of months to any of my talk shows. And then I thought, well, you know, if I'm going to do it. So this one is real simple, and it saves you maybe $200 a year.
Yeah.
Is the bottled water that we buy.
Uh-huh.
It takes five times as much water to make that plastic bottle as the amount of water it holds.
Yeah, I've read that.
Yeah, and we consume 1.5 million barrels of oil to make that water.
Yeah.
So you're going to hit two corporations if you quit buying it. You're going to hit Coke and Pepsi, or maybe three, and then the entire oil industry.
Right.
And that'll take 100,000 cars off the road.
Yeah.
And 1 billion pounds of carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere.
All we have to do is stop buying bottled water.
Yeah, buy a Brita filter or something. Maybe you don't even need it, you know.
Well, we really don't need it here in Atlanta.
Well,
the Atlanta area. I don't live in Atlanta, but in the Atlanta
so
area.
So buy a stainless steel bottle.
Yeah.
Not plastic. Again, that's oil.
That's very true. Thanks,
and
Gerald.
Then,
go ahead.
And then a filter, and you save all that, and you pay for it within a year, right?
That's an excellent idea. And everybody listening just decided that that's exactly what they're going to do. Geraldine, thank you. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. Michael in Roswell, New Mexico, writes in, a Republican libertarian is someone who wants the government's assistance in screwing other people in other countries. Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. And Mary in Denver, regarding Bush's inability to speak in standard English or compound sentences or proper grammatical structure, whatever, Mary writes, hey, Mike, in the audio you played of too much Cappuccino Perino explaining that Chucklenut sometimes makes verbal gaffes, although rarely in view of his frequent public appearances, the spokesgirl demonstrated she's not above the occasional subject-verb disagreement. She said, quote, the integrity of the transcripts are very important. Back when I was diagramming sentences, Mary writes, the subject of that sentence would have been integrity, a singular noun. It requires a singular verb, such as, oh, let's say, is. I guess I feel better now, especially if you know what a sentence diagram is. Oh, hell yeah, Mary. Used to drive me crazy. Oh, my God, you must be almost as old as me. No, that couldn't be. But I remember diagramming sentences. Ah. Oh. I hated it.
We had to do that. We called them parking lots.
Parking lot. Oh, yeah.
They looked like little parking spaces.
They did indeed. Well, you're getting older, too, Kathy. But diagramming sentences. My son, who's 28, when he was in high school, I said, I never see you diagramming sentences. And he looked at me and said, what? But you're absolutely right. The integrity of the transcripts is very important to me. But this is now, and Dana... Too much Cappuccino Perino, the Valley Girl. I don't think we have any doubt, do we? That she doesn't really talk. Where you have the sentence such that the tense is the same with the verb and the noun. I don't think so. I really don't think so. But you know, she's defending freedom and guarding the country against the terrorists in her own special way. So, come on, Mary, don't be so picky. Let me. All right, we have a break coming. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Finally, final hour coming up, and we do have two open lines if you are interested in getting something said. Brian is next. Brian, I know you've been holding on for almost an hour and a half. I'll get you as soon as we come back. Oh, yeah, we have Bush on global warming. We have one more or two more sound bites tonight that you're just going to make you taste your supper again. So stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. It's almost 7 past the hour. We want to play for you now a couple of sound bites from George W. Bush addressing the issue of global climate change and the end of the planet, this planet, as we have come to know and love it over the past, I don't know, 6-7 million years. The Bush crime family, and this is just a knee slapper. It's absolutely hysterical. It's out of sight, out of mind, out of bounds. It's crazy. The Bush crime family convened a two-day conference of the world's major greenhouse gas-emitting nations in D.C. on Thursday. And as a result, the irony, and maybe it's not irony, how do you be ironic with this group of killers? But let's assume that it's irony. The irony served to highlight just how isolated this crime family is on the issue of global warming. The way the Times reports it, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice acknowledged that climate change was a real global problem. Thank you, oil lady. Oh, my God. Former board director of, was it ExxonMobil? Was it Exxon, Kathy? Condoleezza Rice had a tanker named after her. Global climate change is a real problem, she said. And that the United States was a major contributor. But your former employer, Condi, has spent something like $20 million over the past 10, 12 years trying to deep six the whole idea. See, if we lived in a just world, the people at the oil companies who have done this, Not the ones who have provided us the product so we could pollute the atmosphere. No. The people who have tried to convince America that there was no problem. That's just a liberal left-wing plot. That would include most of these oil company executives and board members and, of course, the pig man, Rush Limbaugh. I'm reminded of the 8 or 9 tobacco industry CEOs who sat before Congress and took an oath and swore that nicotine was not addictive. These are lying filth bastards. And a perfect solution in a different time, a different place, would be to haul them all out behind the church and put a bullet in the backs of their heads. Right? Isn't that what they do in China? Oh, no. In China, they just say, here's a piece of rope and some poison, go kill yourself. Not because you did something bad, but because you did something bad and got caught. Condi repeated Bush's insistence that the solution to global climate change could not starve emerging economies of fuel or slow the growth of the advanced nations. Condi said, quote, every country will make its own decisions reflecting its own needs and interests, end quote. Oh, well, that's a good idea. That'll work. That'll work, Condi. Huh? That'll work. Many delegates from the 16 nations at the conference expressed skepticism about the administration's motives, fearing that Mr. Bush was trying to derail a global emissions reduction program managed by the United Nations. No! Oh, ye of little faith! Oh, how could you be so cynical? Oh, my God! George W. Bush is a compassionate conservative, really believes in... It's crazy. Let's let the little twit say some things from today. It was his turn to address the group today. Let's listen to President Global Climate Change. You might call this Operation Save My Legacy. In this first one here, Bush pretends to be an environmentalist who cares nothing for big oil. Or the automotive industries. But he's only concerned with being a good environmental steward who guards against greenhouse gas emissions. As we play these three sound bites for you, I want you to listen how many times this illiterate son of a bitch says the word emissions. He's a real environmentalist who is concerned about the greenhouse gas emissions. The emissions? Oh, well, they're in there too, I guess. Here's your president.
Good morning. Thank you. Welcome to the State Department. I'm honored to address this historic meeting on energy security and climate change. We must lead the world to produce fewer greenhouse gas emissions, and we must do it in a way that does not undermine economic growth
or prevent nations
from delivering greater prosperity for their people.
Yeah, okay.
By developing new low-emission technologies, we can meet the growing demand for energy and at the same time reduce air pollution and greenhouse gas emissions.
Yeah, praise God.
As a result, our nations have an opportunity to leave the debates of the past behind and reach a consensus on the way forward.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's our purpose today.
Uh-huh.
No one country has all the answers, including mine.
Really?
The best way to tackle this problem is to think creatively and to learn from others' experiences and to come together on a way to achieve the objectives we share.
Yeah.
Together, our nations will pave the way for a new international approach on greenhouse gas emissions.
Jesus, God. It is laughable except for the fact that the survival of humans depends on... Oh, never mind. No speech on energy and climate change, or any other topic for that matter, is complete without invoking God and or Jesus. So here it is.
Our investments in research and technology are bringing the world closer to a remarkable breakthrough. An age of clean energy where we can power our growing economies and improve the lives of our people and be responsible stewards of the earth the Almighty trusted to our care.
The who?
As we work to transform the way we produce energy, we must also address another major factor in climate change, which is deforestation.
Oh, yeah!
The world's forests help reduce the amount of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere by storing carbon dioxide.
Really?
But when our forests disappear, the concentration of greenhouse gas levels rise in the atmosphere.
Oh, my God, you're kidding.
Scientists estimate that nearly 20% of the world's greenhouse gas emissions are attributable to deforestation.
Really? Well, does that mean that you're going to roll back your so-called healthy forest initiative, which clear cuts forests and gives huge profits to your logging buddies?
I bet God likes trees, George. What do you think? You think the Almighty would disapprove? The earth the Almighty trusted to our care. Yeah, God is just loving what you're doing down here, George. You're one of God's special posse, man. You're in the inner circle there. Yeah, you are. You know, God, when you die, God is going to just lift you up to heaven and sit you down and fire up a joint with you and pour you a glass of wine and say, George, you just did one hell of a job down there. You want to hear some Black Sabbath while we're waiting?
What are we waiting for? To send you to hell.
Yeah, Bush just loves those forests almost as much as his logging buddies do.
America's efforts also include an $87 million initiative to help developing nations stop illegal logging.
Yeah!
These efforts will help developing nations save their forests.
Yeah!
And combat a major source of greenhouse gas emissions.
Admission, yeah.
So far, my administration has concluded 12 agreements, including up to 50 million acres of forest lands.
Concluding?
By working together, we will set wise and effective policies.
Yes,
that's what I'm interested in, effective policies.
Yeah, I'm yeah.
And that's what I'm here to urge you.
Yeah.
I want to get the job done.
Yeah.
We've identified a problem. Let's go solve it together.
All right, let's go. All right.
We'll harness the power of technology.
Damn straight.
There is a way forward that
yes.
will enable us to grow our economies and
yes.
protect the environment, and that's called technology.
It's called what? Technology? What do that mean? It's called technology. Well, now, wait a minute, George. That's a pretty damn big word there. There's a way to enable us to grow our economies and protect the environment. It's called technology for them gas emissions because, you know, forests do things.
There's no vacancy as you stare at me vacantly. To have some quiet time. There's nobody home. The sign says there's no vacancy, but everything you say to me convinces me most certainly there's nobody home.
They pay paradise and put up a parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. No, no, no.
What happens in those forests, because of lousy federal policy, is they grow to be they are not they're not harvested.
But wait! Oh, never mind. Well, Barb sent me something here. This is from the Guardian of the UK. Headline, Europeans angry after Bush climate speech, charade. Oh, but the Europeans just can't take a joke, can they, huh? They just chopped down every single force they've ever had. Now they're going to get pissy with us? Oh, please. George Bush was castigated by European diplomats and found himself isolated yesterday after a special conference on climate change ended without any progress. European ministers, diplomats, and officials attending the Washington conference were scathing, particularly in private, over Mr. Bush's failure once again to commit to binding action on climate change. Although the U.S. and Britain have been at odds over the environment since the early days of the Bush administration, the gap has never been as wide as yesterday. Britain and almost all other European countries, including Germany and France, want mandatory targets for reducing greenhouse emissions. Mr. Bush, while talking yesterday about a new approach and a historic undertaking, remains totally opposed. The conference, attended by more than 20 countries, including China, India, Britain, France, and Germany, broke up with the U.S. isolated, according to non-Americans attending. One of those present said even China and India, two of the biggest polluters, accepted that the voluntary approach proposed by the U.S. was untenable and favored these two big countries binding measures, even though they disagree with the Europeans over how this would be achieved. A senior European diplomat attending the conference, speaking on conditions of anonymity, said the meeting confirmed European suspicions that have been intended by Mr. Bush as a spoiler for a major UN conference on climate change in Bali in December. The diplomat said, quote, it was a total charade and has been exposed as a charade. I have never heard a more humiliating speech by a major leader. Mr. Bush was trying to present himself as a leader while showing no sign of leadership. It was a total failure.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. What's your president like? Huh? What's in your wallet?
Why, of course. Of course. George Bush is as interested in global climate change or stopping deforestation or global warming or melting ice caps or rising sea levels or the utter
economic disaster, the death and destruction that is truly heading our way. You think we're going to have time for little adventures in Iraq? When this crap finally unloads and unloosens over the next 2 decades, huh? I don't know if I'm going to be alive. I don't know if you're going to be alive. None of us know who's going to be alive, when or where. But I will guarantee you that when my daughter is 23, it's going to be ugly. And I don't know if you and I will be around. Perhaps it's a good thing we won't be, so that we don't have to try to answer the questions that those generations just around the corner are going to ask us. What in the name of Christ was wrong with you people? Why didn't you do something? Why didn't you do something? Oh, well, we were... the science isn't in yet. The science isn't in yet? But Florida doesn't exist below Orlando. What do you mean the science? Ah, well, that, you know, stuff happens. They're going to ask us. Those of us who survive the next 20 years, they're going to ask us. Your kids, your grandkids. Grandpa, grandma, why didn't you do something? Mom, dad, what? How could you have given this to us? What are we supposed to do now? It's just unbelievable. And there's still time. I'm reminded of the banner in the last scene in On the Beach from way back in the, when did that movie come out, in the 50s? The banner that the Salvation Army left up on a little park in downtown Melbourne, Australia, or Sydney, Australia, wherever it was. But all the people are gone because they've all gone home to take their suicide pills because this huge cloud of radiation is coming their way. From the Northern Hemisphere. Everybody is dead. And the banner flaps in the breeze for just a moment, and it says simply, "There is still time, brother." And the camera zooms in. "There is still time, brother. There is still time, brother."
We want to work cooperatively with these countries in their efforts to reduce greenhouse emissions. Any collective approach is one based upon sound science and not based upon science.
It's incredible, isn't it? Well, I wonder when Bush is going to veto the children's health insurance plan that will soon be on his desk. There are a couple of things I want to get to tonight. Obviously, we're not going to, but just another example. We've cited example after example, and I know you're as tired of it as I am, of the incompetency of every single part of the Bush crime family where it concerns managing this country. Now, the Food and Drug Administration, it's been released. The Inspector General of the Department of Health and Human Services released a report today that says the Food and Drug Administration does very little to ensure the safety of the millions of people who participate in clinical trials. You know about new medicines. The Inspector General, Daniel Levinson, said federal health officials did not know how many clinical trials are being conducted. They audit fewer than 1% of the testing sites. And on the rare occasions when inspectors did appear, generally showed up long after the tests had been completed. The Food and Drug Administration has 200 inspectors, some of whom audit clinical trials part-time, to police an estimated 350,000 testing sites. Arthur Kaplan, chairman of the Ethics Department, Medical Ethics, University of Pennsylvania, said, quote, in many ways, rats and mice get greater protection as research subjects in the U.S. than do humans, end quote. Even clinical tests on human beings, the Bush crime family says the pharmaceutical companies, go ahead, you know, whatever, we'll turn the other way. never mind. This is in today's New York Times, and you should read it. You really should. Maybe you already have. Get it online. Food and Drug Administration. You know, I've said it before. I'll say it again. I don't know why I say it. It's stupid of me to say it. But any time any Republican or conservative wants to call this program and state for the record and for the audience and for me one thing, just one thing, that the Bush crime family has done that benefits the people of this country, one thing, just one thing, and that does not benefit their corporate sponsors, the pharmaceutical industry or the energy industry in all its many shapes and forms, the logging industry, the just one thing. And in asking that question for 3 years, either there's not a Republican out there with the courage to call this program who can put a sentence together, or there is nothing. I'm sure it's both. Brian is calling from Joliet, Illinois, who's been holding on since God was a teenager. Brian, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. I used to teach philosophy and communication.
Yeah?
And I'm not going to talk about libertarianism because, you know, that's not what I called for.
Okay.
But may I just say it's just the exact opposite of FDR's Economic Bill of Rights.
Yeah, I would think. Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, I heard you talk on it before. You got it right. You got it down correctly. Absolutely.
Good. I hate it when I make a fool of myself, and I do that just with alarming regularity, but that's not why you called.
No, it wasn't, sir. Mike. this is connected to the health care. I'm for the single payer, and I support Kucinich. But there was an article from the Chicago Sun-Times called The Downside of Blockbuster Drugs, and that was from May 30th, 2007. And it says that the adverse drug reactions are among the 10 leading causes of deaths, killing as many as 100,000 patients a year in U.S. hospitals.
Yeah, wasn't that stunning? I remember that report. It's just mind-boggling, Brian.
Yeah, absolutely. And in my view, that this is the fault of FDA cutbacks, pharmaceutical companies, and really, quite frankly, I think in some instances, you know, you have doctors, you know, who take the Hippocratic Oath, and they really mean it, and they deserve the money they get.
Right.
And there's also doctors who take the Hypocrite's Oath and think they're gods and just want to be millionaires. But I also wanted to just make a comment on this expansion of the hate crimes law.
Yes.
Yeah. I just wanted to say thanks to Ted Kennedy and the others in the Senate who passed hate crimes bill yesterday,
mm-hmm.
and who voted to expand the hate crimes law to include crimes motivated by gender or disability victims.
Yes.
And that's what I wanted to say, Mike, and thank you very much for taking my call.
Well, thank you, Brian. I appreciate it. I hope you call again. Next time you call in, pal, I will not allow you to sit there for 2 hours. Thanks, Brian.
Thank you, Mike.
All right, take care.
And Edie here has been holding on for an hour and a half. Edie, in Montgomery, Alabama, listening on the internet. Hey, Edie, welcome to the program.
Hi, Jeff. well, have you heard about the outbreak of cholera in Iraq?
I have.
I sent you an email, I believe.
I've gotten a couple of them. They are restricting, I don't know how they do this, the military is restricting travel because of that outbreak. What does that mean? They're restricting the travel inside the country of U.S. military personnel? They're restricting the travel of the people who live there? What does it mean?
The story I read from the AP from Geneva, and it's the report done by the World Health Organization.
Uh-huh.
And they're talking about Iraqis that are on the move, trying to escape, you know, death squads and all. And
so they're trying to stop them from running, from leaving the country, or
well, it just states that the outbreak of cholera in Iraq has spread with new cases confirmed in Baghdad, some of the place I can't say.
Uh-huh.
And for the first time, it's Basra, yeah. And for the first time, northern districts of Kirkuk, Mosul, and Dakhout, the WHO said Tuesday. This makes 2,116 the number of confirmed cases of cholera in Iraq and 11 deaths. And it's the disease shows that the people are on the move, and as they move, they're spreading the disease. And a spokesman for the WHO said they expect this to be a global health problem, to say the least, and that they note that over 30,000 people have been felled by acute watery diarrhea,
right,
which may be later confirmed as cholera,
right.
So this is just, see, they don't have drinking water.
No, and this raises the issue that I swear to God I've been talking about for a decade, and that is the utter and absolute decimation and destruction that has been laid on the country of Iraq by primarily the United States, yep, and the United Kingdom. It's just, I mean, if somebody eventually will write the history of the atrocities that have been perpetrated against the Iraqi people, it doesn't just begin with the George Herbert Walker Bush's invasion of Iraq. It goes back before that. I'm not letting Saddam off the hook. Saddam was a son of a bitch. You can just keep going back and back and back. But what has been done to these people since 1991? In terms of dealing with depleted uranium, in terms of dealing with an embargo against their country that allegedly was supposed to let in food and medical supplies, which obviously did not, the horror that's been perpetrated against this poor group of people that we call Iraqis, it's just astonishing, Edie, and now this.
Yes, well, and the old people and the children are just dropping like flies.
Like flies. It's just...
And it's a horrible nightmare, and I like, you know, and I said, well, gee, that's just one more horror that our government has inflicted on these people, and I just hope the WHO or somebody will get to them with some clean water, and you can't be bathing and drinking in the Euphrates with the headless dead bodies floating down.
Yeah, that's not good.
No.
Good way to get sick, yeah.
And give them some equipment where they can strain the water and boil it, something.
Yeah.
But they've got to be helped because it's they're taking it into Persia, well, Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in Jordan, any of these countries that are kind enough to take some of these folks in, they're bringing it with them. And then it's going to be a scourge all over those countries.
Well, you know, the Bush crime family, that would probably make them happy because, after all, Edie, they're just Muslims. So, listen, Edie, thanks. Appreciate what you had to say. Take care, okay?
Bye-bye.
All right, okay. You know, paraphrasing once again, Thomas Jefferson,
You know, we should all tremble at even the idea of a just God.
Marie. Now I believe to be here is right. But I have to say that I'm scared tonight. Crouching in this hole, with a mouth full of sand. What comes first? The country.
Ten before the hour. Thanks to our tiny posse for putting the show together tonight and all this week. Ian Huff, Billy Foster, Chris in Minnesota, and Catherine Bay, our executive producer. And all of y'all, with your emails, your phone calls, and the fact that you decided to tune in and listen, thanks. I appreciate it. I hope you have a good weekend, too. We finally have San Diego weather here in Atlanta. Highs over the next 4 or 5 days are supposed to be, what, in the upper 70s, right, Kathy? And the lows in the upper 50s with bright, clear, blue sky, no pollution. One of the reasons I moved back here all those years ago. San Diego weather. All right, back to your phone calls. Don is calling from Iowa. Don has also been holding on forever. Don is listening via Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Don.
Hi, Don. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Yeah, I was calling about Bush's sound bites that they've been playing about Bush, where he's talking about Vietnam.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Is he trying to make it sound? It sounds to me like he thinks that we should have stayed over there and never left.
Yeah, he does, because don't you know that the entire Southeast Asia fell to the commies and there's been nothing but butchery? And, you know, that's the part that just makes me want to scream, because we now have diplomatic relations with Vietnam. They have factories that are turning out American clothing. Vietnam is becoming the new China. It's just, I don't know. I don't know what this freak says. When he says it, it makes no sense. I don't know the point he was trying to make. If we would have won, quote, in Vietnam, what does that mean? Another 100,000 American dead? Another 2 million Vietnamese dead? What does winning over there, what would be different? You see what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I understand that completely.
Yeah, he's such a moron. He's just an absolute, utter moron, Don. I don't think he knows what he's saying. He really doesn't.
Right. And back in 2000, when he was in the primaries for the Republican Party,
yeah,
him and his campaign ran an ad in South Carolina about John McCain and having an out-of-wedlock black child.
That's right.
And, you know, they talk about Petraeus and wanting apologies. Where's the apologies that we've never heard from the Bush administration for what was done to John McCain?
What about apologies for what was done to Max Cleland, a Vietnam veteran triple amputee?
Right.
That they linked to Saddam and Osama. That's why when these little pissants start whining, Don, about the Petraeus ad, I just, you know, like, I don't hear it. Or if I do hear it, it's like it just doesn't register except to make me more angry. They knew that in saying that about McCain in South Carolina, because South Carolina is chock-a-block with racists, they knew all they had to say was, yeah, he's got an out-of-wedlock black baby. Well, actually, the child was not white, but it's an adopted child from somewhere in the Far East, I believe.
Yeah.
And that's what gets me about McCain. They did everything. They lied and cheated, and Jerry Falwell helped out on that. Bush helped out on that. Of course, Falwell's in hell now. I think Robertson helped out on that. And McCain, as soon as it was all over, just couldn't wait until he could kiss Bush. You've seen that photograph where he's hugging Bush.
Oh yeah.
Oh, it's just unbelievable. And this guy wants to be president. McCain, yeah, okay, sure, that'll happen.
I agree. Well, thanks, Mike.
All right.
Keep up the good work.
All right, sir. Drive safe, Don. Just take it easy. Drive safe. Marie is calling from Tempe, Arizona, listening on KPHX. Hey, Marie, welcome to the program.
Now, you know that was initiation now, Mike, don't you?
A what?
Initiation into Skulls and Bones or something. McCain and Bush.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well.
Well, that's what it kind of sounds like, you know. You know, that's the thing of it. You know, these politics is all about these secret societies, Illuminati. I mean, let's call it for what it is. I mean, it's neocon. And
yeah, I know.
God, Mike, I just well, I got an idea.
All
because
right,
I'm like the other woman that says I want to call up and I want to have an idea. And what Sean and Sarge are going to do, making the politicians ride the buses down here. And I like to go further. Now, have you heard of Joyce Riley?
I think I have, but right in the moment I'm drawing a blank in what context.
Okay, Joyce Riley
yeah.
is military. She was a military nurse.
Yeah.
And she has a DVD called Beyond Treason.
Uh-huh.
It talks about the psychological and biological warfare that these criminals have been doing
right.
on the military and on civilians. And it's been going on for a long time.
Right.
And, you know, I'm like you. I'm half crazy out of my mind. Now, I say that this is intentional. I think that this is so deliberate and that we as a citizenry should sue them because this is so ridiculous and obvious, but yet our congressmen and representatives act like they don't know their ass from a hole in the ground.
Well, I'll tell you what we should. As far as I'm concerned, Marie, there's a solution to this, and that's called impeachment, and that's what the Constitution insists on. And of course, the Democratic leaders in the House and the Senate are not going to do it. But that's the only rational solution. They're acting irrationally. I guess we could too, but if we did that, we'd have to do what Pat Buchanan always suggested, and that's show up outside the White House with pitchforks and burning torches and demand that the monster come out and face the music. Thanks, Maria. I appreciate you checking in. And thanks, everybody, for hanging out with us tonight. I'll see you Monday night, okay? Take care. Have a great weekend, or a good weekend. Have a weekend, all right? Take care. I'm Mike Malloy. Oh, keep it lit. This is Nova M Radio. I'm going straight. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.